Good afternoon and welcome to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. I'm Lauren Fox.
And I'm Andrew Hansen.
And I guess technically it's afternoon to us, but if you're listening tomorrow morning, which is Saturday, it's morning.
Or Sunday night,
which is not afternoon, but technically it's noon. It's afternoon, but it's not the afternoon.
It's the night.
So the reason we're recording the show so late is because I was driving on 101. And it took me approximately an hour to get here from the Bedford Amherst line, or close to it. Traffic is nice.
Friday afternoon.
Where is everybody going? Dude, I don't have anywhere to go. Should I?
Didn't you go to Concord today?
I went to Concord today. Well, that really doesn't count. But like, just like I always ask the question, where is everybody going? Like, it's Friday afternoon. Everybody's just like jammed into traffic. And the other thing is, like, I wonder, because they're coming from like the Amherst, Milford, Wilton, Peterborough direction. Like, where are they going? It's nice that way.
Good questions. All good questions.
Are you going to Manchester for Friday night? Like, what? You want to make sure that you get in early at Republic?
Could be.
Get a good spot on the bleachers at the Bedford High game tonight as they host, they got Merrimack tonight.
Concord?
Or maybe, no, I know what it was. The boys' soccer team starts at 4 today, so everybody was on their way to Hanover.
That's it.
It's got to be.
Or they're on their way to watch Nadal in the semis. He starts at 4 o'clock as well.
Nadal traffic. Although, you probably saw some of it when Federer got knocked out by John Millman.
Yes.
Yeah. And Millman, did you see the post-match interview? Well, first of all, Federer should have won that thing. There was a point in time when he could have had match point. What did he commit? 76 unforced errors in the match. I mean, it was some astronomical number. Like, that doesn't happen to him. I mean, he's obviously thinking about going to the Maldives or something like that to hang out with people who hang out places like the Maldives. But
76 is too many.
That's
no matter how many sets it is
for anybody. That's bad. But Millman's Australian and finishes the post-match interview by saying, it's really late. I have to wake up tomorrow morning and do my fantasy football draft. And like, what do you think of all this? And he's like, yeah, I'm trying to figure out whether I take Le'Veon Bell or Todd Gurley. I have the number two pick. Well, as it turns out, I don't know. Bell will sign. We know that.
Yes.
And you know that he will be a force near the end of the year. You don't win a fantasy football season in week one.
He'll probably sign by the time this show airs for the second time.
Fact. So, I don't know. I wish I could be choosy about a $14.5 million contract.
Well, he's going to play it, right? He's going to sign tomorrow. If you're listening to this on Saturday, he's probably going to sign at some point, maybe even during the show's airing, so that he can suit up in time for tomorrow's game and get his first game check and not really worry about playing, you know, save wear and tear for 1 week. But get his full salary for the year.
And you have, you've worked in offices, as have I. And like, I remember and we'll get back to tennis in a second. We're now like all over the place. But I remember going on vacation and feeling guilt. Like, I'm not there and my coworkers are working on things and we got this project that's launching and I'm not a part of this. And Le'Veon Bell, I guess to his credit, because you only have so many miles that you can put on your body, Le'Veon Bell, to his credit, is just like, you know what? They're going to do it. I know that I'm the number one guy, and I know that they need me more than I need them. No disrespect to my teammates, but why am I going to go and have my meter run when I don't have to sign until literally September 8th to play September 9th?
Yeah, it's a fascinating saga that has only played out how it has because of who it is. And you're right. He has nothing left to prove to the Steelers or anyone else.
Absolutely not.
If he didn't play this year, he's going to sign a huge deal in the offseason for somebody.
Right.
So he has nothing to prove. His backup, Connor, I think is going to be a very good player. And so, but Le'Veon's probably not worried about that either. I mean, even if for some reason Bell gets less touches this year because Connor steps up in the first week and dazzles.
Great. I mean, James Conner is a great story, too.
Yeah.
I mean,
he is
a cancer survivor who played at the University of Pittsburgh, has done well, was a good draft pick, well thought of guy. So he's a great story too, and you want to root for him to get the opportunity. But I guess to anybody who's ever watched Le'Veon Bell approach the line when he's got the football, on how he kind of takes his time to get to the line and sort of picks
stops,
his spots,
looks around,
has a sandwich,
checks the
maybe
wind,
coffee, maybe there. Like, this really shouldn't be a surprise. That kind of seems like his approach to life.
Yeah, he'll go when he's ready.
He's pretty chill.
Yeah, he's pretty chill.
Yeah, so, but getting back to tennis, Millman goes and beats Federer in five sets. What was it, 4 hours and 49 minutes?
Seems like all the five-setters are about
it's
that
killer.
Length now.
Like, just insane. And then Nadal just cuts him down, straight sets, that's it. No more.
He's on a mission.
Yeah, put another shrimp on the Bobby.
Yeah, so hopefully we'll see him in Djokovic.
That would be fun to see. So, yeah, and on the women's side, Serena.
You were right.
What?
Straight sets against Venus.
Oh, yeah, that was a no-doubter.
I thought you might give her one set.
Nah, I don't know. It's one thing if you're playing five sets, you can afford to kind of let one slip away. But when you're playing best two out of three, if you let one slip away, now all of a sudden the match can slip away. That's a no-brainer. Then it gets to kind of a different question and, you know, something that I've always wondered. Why do the women play best two out of three, but the men play best three out of five?
Yeah, there's been some talk recently of even some men saying that maybe five is too much. And you'll see it in some tournaments that they play three.
Right, yeah.
But the vast majority, they do play five.
And
have for a long time.
I enjoy the drama of five, and I enjoy the theater of you're playing a five-setter. I mean, this is like between 4 and 5 hours of serving and returning and the wear and tear that puts on you. And I joke about Roger Federer going to the Maldives, but for as much as these guys absolutely tear their bodies apart to do this, like, you need a little bit of time to recover and fix things that are no doubt broken over the course of a tour.
It is an incredible test of fitness.
Yeah.
Let alone tennis skill.
Right.
To win a Grand Slam.
Yes.
And that just makes it all the more remarkable that Serena at 36 is on the cusp of doing it again. She's going to face Naomi Osaka in the finals. Do you know
which,
how?
That sounds like somewhat of a fake name.
It's real.
Is that a nom de plume?
She's apparently the first Japanese woman in the Open era to win to reach the final of a Grand Slam. And do you know how old she was when Serena won her first major?
I don't even want to know.
One.
Seriously. Yes. It's can you imagine, though, the mental burden if you are Naomi Osaka of you're going out to play this person that you have been watching dominate as long as you can remember. And, you know, the other thing is Serena Williams is one of my just favorite stories of now. You look at women athletes and the kind of the typical course that is charted. Either you are a career athlete and not a family person, or you have a family and you leave whatever game, and whenever you have a family, you're done. And
Especially in tennis. Most tennis players retire around 30 to 32.
Right.
You know, and so it actually works out that when a great women's tennis player retires and starts a family, it kind of works with the timing of everything to stop playing tennis when most players have surpassed their peak,
right,
and are on the downside and transition to family.
Right. But Serena she's an anomaly, and she's always been an anomaly. And we talked about her dad last week and the 78-page plan to create really from nothing a tennis dynasty, and he succeeded. But you look at Venus and her dedication to the family, and one of her coaches said, maybe nursing your baby isn't a good idea. Maybe it's time to move on to something else. And Serena basically said, this is the one time in my life that I'm going to mean this much to this creature that I brought into the world. So I'm not giving that up. Like, this is a really important thing to me. And I've got two kids, but like for somebody to put it in terms like that, really thoughtful terms like that about what it means to be a parent, meant a lot to me as a parent to realize, okay, they're not these fully formed things when they come out. And we all know that, but we're responsible for a lot of things as it pertains to these kids. And here's somebody who should be as distracted as anybody on the planet from her kid, but isn't.
Yeah, it is remarkable. She's a role model in many ways. And it was a bummer to see what happened in the Wimbledon final, that she just didn't quite have it that day. And you wonder what may have played into it. But hopefully in this final, she'll be at her best. And she'll capture another U.S. Open.
So looking forward to watching that, of course, coming up later this weekend. If you're listening on Sunday, this will have already taken place. So, but thinking about what else is going on around here, I had the opportunity to play 18 holes of golf for the first time in 5 years, maybe at least. It's been years today. I guess my biggest takeaway is I can't putt.
Well, if you don't play 18 holes for 5 years, your short game's probably going to be a little bit rusty.
No. It was a novel feeling wearing shoes on the golf course, though.
I was going to say, well, no wonder you shot over 100.
No, it was good. If I could putt, yeah, it was like Happy Gilmore, like Happy learned to putt. Like, if I could have putted decently, it would have been around in the 80-ish, high 80, low 90 range. But when you're... Happy learn to putt. When you're three putting like literally every other hole,
that hurts.
You don't really give yourself a chance to par anything.
No.
Although the guy that I was playing with today, a client of mine, I hit a putt and it went 180 degrees around the hole and came out. And he looked at me and he said, Lauren, I read an article on Golf Digest. You would have to hit 1,000 putts for that to happen. That's the chances of that happening. 1 in 1,000.
I've never heard that before.
Yeah. So now you know. And I almost did it twice in the round, but yeah, the second time it went in.
I've done that in the last month as well, and I have not hit 1,000 putts. So
yeah.
Hopefully you and I have that out of our system now.
For a while. Woke up this morning, was watching ESPN, and was very excited to see the results from the BMW Championship, or at least day one. It felt like old times. I was like, the band is back together.
Big time. 8 under for Tiger and Rory.
Yeah. So those two were atop the leaderboard. They are not now, though.
They are not. It's Xander Schauffele.
Thank God, because I can never remember how to pronounce his name.
Well.
Schauffele. Until the next time that I forget how to pronounce it.
Not only is pronouncing his name a challenge, but also recognizing him apparently is a challenge. Because I don't think you got a chance to see our friend Michael Collins' tweet about Xander.
Yeah.
He said, security at the golf club wouldn't let Xander Schauffele in the locker room without a credential. He's leading the tournament.
That's awesome.
And, you know, if you don't know Schauffele, he is one of the shorter players on tour, very slight build, you know, a smaller frame than even Ricky Fowler. And so... if you're not really in tune with all the players on tour, then he might look like a non-athlete.
Yeah.
But he can sure play golf.
I've answered my own question. I was like, why would a random dude just try to sneak into the locker room? But then again, you know.
Yeah, fans.
Guilty.
Fans could do that.
Done just
sure.
about anything. But, you know, the guy that doesn't need any ID anywhere he goes, anywhere related to the tour, is Michael Collins.
Yeah, right.
Like, literally, yeah.
My credentials are my beard.
My credentials are me. I mean, there's nobody else that looks like Michael Collins. But, yeah, it was fun to see day one just wake up and go, God, these guys are both 8 under. Is this going to hold? For Tiger, it was weird that he had a good first round.
Yeah, his best first round in a long time. I thought it was going to happen last week at Boston. He'd won there before. Second round of the playoffs, second playoff event. You know, I thought that would have been the week, but apparently this is the week where he might have a real shot at the winner's circle. And, you know, he only shot even par today. He actually had a couple lip outs.
Yep.
So, you know, if his putter warms up again over the weekend, could be the first win in many years.
Yeah, so that will be fun to see. Not quite certain what's going to happen, but you want to tune into the BMW. Where is that?
It's near Philly.
Okay.
So there are a lot of folks who on day one on Thursday went to that tournament, and right when Tiger left, right when Tiger finished, apparently most of the crowd left because they were getting ready for Philly's home opener in the NFL. Same night, same city. So they had to go get ready to tailgate, meet up with their friends, barbecue.
They had to go get ready to boo Santa Claus?
Yeah, right. They had to travel around town in like 95-degree weather until the storm hit and cooled things off. It seemed like that's what happened all over the East Coast.
But yeah, it happened thankfully here.
They delayed the start of the first NFL game. Was that last night? That was last night. Wow.
Was it? Okay. Yeah.
First regular season game, and they had to delay it. But yeah, quite a week of sports in Philly for, the Eagles fans celebrating the championship, Super Bowl victory, and they've got a playoff event right next door.
So a lot of fun going on in the world of sports right now. The NFL opening, as you mentioned, the Red Sox remain hot. I haven't even looked at their record. All I know is they're way ahead of the Yankees now.
They are creeping up on 100 wins.
And it's not okay. They're 97-44, 9.5 games ahead of the Yankees, who are kind of going in the opposite direction. The excitement earlier this week, I don't remember what day it was. It feels like the week just flew by in the blink of an eye, was them coming back in Atlanta, down 7-1, putting up 6 in the top half of the 8th inning. And as our correspondent Steve Tempesta put it, the Red Sox tend to do pretty well against relief pitchers or tend to put up numbers late in games. And as if on cue, there's a stat that comes on Nesson. They have the second best OPS in the major leagues against relievers. We'd never figured out who the best was. Kind of an obscure stat, but that's been the MO. Then Freddie Freeman, who never hits home runs in batting practice, but only hits them in games, hits a bomb in the bottom of the 8th inning, puts his team up 8-7. And then Brandon Phillips, who has long been one of my favorites is originally drafted by the Expos way back when. That's how long he's been around. But broke in and was most prominent with the Reds. Phillips comes up really getting his first meaningful action in the major leagues after some time in Lowell and Pawtucket, and hits an absolute no doubter that our guy, Ronald Acuna Jr., we watched the video. He didn't even move. He just pounds his fist into his glove, and that's that.
Yeah, we watched that video before the show, and it was worth a view. You got to describe his swing. It was a very unique home run swing.
Yeah, you described a friend of yours as a, what did he say? He was either everybody's a back leg or a front leg hitter, which I guess it makes sense. I mean, nobody's perfectly balanced. You got to have some balance somewhere, but Phillips is all on the back leg. It's all core, and he makes contact. Once he makes contact, the top hand leaves, and then he slides back onto his heels as if somebody's shoving him, and he's trying to not get into the fight. Like, whoa, my hands are up, but the thing is just leaving on a line. Like, you could have hung your clothing on it.
Yeah, he almost looked like Neo.
Yes. So, yeah, I guess that's the only way. If you're playing in the NFL now and you sack the quarterback, like, that's what you have to do. You can't come down with your body weight on the quarterback. You must levitate.
Right.
Otherwise, yes, you get a 15-yard penalty. But yeah, Brandon Phillips' first hit as a member of the Red Sox was memorable. The other thing that was fun about Brandon Phillips is they walked through, all right, what number do you want? And he said, I want 4. And 4 is retired. Joe Cronin had that one. 7, I don't believe 7's in service right now. The most prominent Red Sox player I can think of who wore it was Trot Nixon, but
probably not being retired for Trot, though.
No. I mean, it's always a fan favorite, but I don't know who 7 is. That's Baseball Almanac will tell me eventually.
The Red Sox don't have many retired numbers.
They have a good amount of retired numbers, the Sox.
I think they have a shorter list than most.
Let's see. The Red Sox, number 7. Prominent 7s. Dom DiMaggio. There you go. Not for him. Reggie Smith. The Rooster, Rick Burleson. Vasquez is wearing it now. So there you go. 7 is in use. So Phillips then said, I want 44, which 44 is in use. I don't know who's wearing that right now. Maybe it's, I don't know. You got any ideas?
I don't. Probably a relief pitcher.
That wouldn't make sense. Hang on, we'll get there. This is what happens when you don't always prepare. Brandon Workman is wearing 44. So Phillips goes, give me the weirdest number you can give me. And they said, well, nobody's ever worn zero. So there you go.
He went with it. He's like, you don't have the numbers I want. I'll go off the reservation.
Agent Zero is what he was referring to himself as. And so that is what he's wearing, zero.
It's working out for him so far.
It's working out well for him so far. So the Red Sox playing well at this point in the season. The hardest thing in Major League Baseball is when you get into the playoffs, are your pitching matchups sound? And that's really where kind of managing that bullpen will really pay off. So, or not. Just ask Dave Roberts. Dodgers manager last year's World Series. Not bitter, though.
You just mentioned that probably once a month on the show?
No, it's thereabouts, yeah. No, I just, the Rich Hill.
It was Rich Hill, right?
Mad, yeah. speaking of pitching, the other piece of the puzzle or lack thereof, your favorite player, Shohei Ohtani.
The UCL.
So,
it's back.
What do you do with that?
Well, unfortunately, you don't do much pitching for the next year and a half, probably.
You can't play.
You don't pitch until 2020.
Right, but you can't get the surgery and then come back and hit.
Well, apparently you can hit with a torn UCL.
You can hit with a torn one, but you wouldn't want to hit with a repaired one.
Well, maybe he should just never pitch again keep hitting, because
that was my thought, though. Does he go like a full Rick Ankiel? And do you shelve the pitching?
No, he's going to come back and pitch. I just joke because of what happened that night. What an amazing story. He gets news that UCL is torn. And he's going to need Tommy John surgery. And he suits up and he hits two home runs in Texas that very night.
When are they going to shut him down, though? Or are they even going to bother?
I haven't heard the latest, but I think he's going to keep hitting. And I did hear some quotes from the press conference where the team's plans do include that he'll return to the mound in the future. They said, you know, we promised him that we would allow him to be a two-way player, and they want to continue that. That's the plan as of now.
I find it interesting how, I don't know, think of how many, and this is a knock, I think, maybe on Major League Baseball. Think about how many successful Japanese pitchers have come to the USA and adapted to what we're doing and have blown out their arms. And there are more, obviously. There's more than Ohtani. I mean, and maybe I'm looking at it as a small sample size, or maybe the other thing is you have a guy who, this is the after effect of potential overuse from when he was in Japan. But it seems like that has been a relatively recurring theme of, all right, you're here, you maybe have a year of success and then, or a year or two of success, and then.
Yeah, I don't recall.
The injuries hit.
How many of those top level Japanese pitchers have been injured? Maybe you can remember better. But what I did hear recently is that they all had a longer career in Japan before they came over. Guys like Daisuke had a lot more innings on them than Ohtani, and so I don't recall if those guys got hurt earlier in their career in Japan.
Yeah, and that I just don't know.
Or over here, but maybe he's going to be one of those guys where you have the one major pitching injury,
right,
and then you come back stronger forever.
Well, Tommy John surgery at this point is kind of like going to the grocery store for these guys anyway. You're on the shelf for 14 months, you're back. I mean, and if there was anybody who was going to come back earlier, you would have the feeling it would be Ohtani.
Yeah.
But, I mean, at this point, he's a bit behind the curve for himself. He has joined a major league team. By age 19, he was going to master English and reach AAA. By age 20, called up to the majors, make $13 million. Age 21, 16 wins.
These were his goals, correct?
Age 22, win the Cy Young Award. Age 23, member of a Japan WBC team. And then by age 24, throw a no-hitter and 25 wins.
He didn't get 25 wins this year, but he's got 4 wins and he's pushing 20 homers.
Yes.
Not a bad consolation prize.
I would still consider him as the rookie of the year in the AL.
3.31 ERA on the mound.
Yeah.
And he's pushing 20 homers. He's definitely the rookie of the year in my book.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about how what he has done with with that combination of hitting and pitching has not been done since Babe Ruth 99 years ago. So I don't care how many plate appearances he has. I don't care how many innings he has. He's hit those marks. He's the rookie of the year.
Right. That is rarefied air to be in. If they mention you with Babe Ruth, you're in really good company. So certainly hope that he has a quick recovery from it. I would figure the Angels would probably try to get whatever they can out of him through the rest of the year. But unfortunately for them, too, they're also not having a terribly good year.
No, they're out of it. But the other thing I heard from the press conference is that the GM was really impressed with how Shohei has focused on his eating, his sleeping, and just taking care of himself. So to your point, I do think he'll come back as fast as anyone.
It is not an easy thing to do that when you're in Southern California and there's Wahoo's Fish Taco and there's In-N-Out Burger. And
discipline. You need discipline.
Del Taco, like, no. There's so much. Like, I go to California for 3 days and I put on 10 pounds because everywhere I go, I'm like, ooh, der Wiener Schnitzel. Maybe I'll get a couple corn dogs. It's, yeah. There was an article floating around on The Onion, too, that was headlined, Shohei Ohtani regrets not researching which teams were good before signing with Angels.
I
grew up with the Angels as the Clippers and the Dodgers as the Lakers. Like, that was kind of the pairing off, that the Angels were the sad team that always had something weird befall them. And for years and years and years, the same things would always happen. From the tragic to, like the Donnie Moore giving up the home run to Dave Henderson which yeah. In this part of the country, that's a positive thing. Donnie Moore ultimately had family problems and took his own life a few years later. Lyman Bostock, who was murdered in 1978. They had prospects that were injured in car accidents and never played again. Players who, it was just like this string of bad things happening to the Angels. And then 2002 happened. They won the World Series, and you kind of like, all right, now they're prominent and they're good, and they had a nice run of getting to the playoffs. And you like,
and you still have Mike Socha.
Mike Socha's
for a little
Mike
bit longer.
Socha's been there for 20 years. The thing that I hate to see is Mike Trout never really get that national stage. Major League Baseball can say all they want about him not marketing himself appropriately, but he doesn't have the opportunity to. There's no World Series. There's no LCS. There's no like plays that are going to be cemented in anybody's memory because they're made as the little brother of the Dodgers. Which is just bizarre.
It'll turn around. In the next couple of years, Trout's still going to be in his prime. Ohtani will get healthy. Pujols may still have a little bit left.
I don't know about that. The Shohei Ohtani saga continues. And I don't know. Who do the Patriots have on Sunday?
The Houston Texans.
Okay.
Their old friend Bill O'Brien.
Yeah, there,
at the
there you
helm.
Go. Yeah, oh, that's right.
Deshaun Watson's healthy again.
Who are they? They were having one of the backups mimic Deshaun Watson in practice.
And that probably didn't go over very well.
Attempt to do what Deshaun.
It probably didn't match up very well.
No, it never does. No. I mean, USC is playing Stanford this weekend, and they have a fifth or sixth string running back, a walk on. Who played at Sacramento State last year, attempting to emulate Bryce Love, who was the finalist for the Heisman Trophy.
Yeah, right.
I'm like, well, I don't know about that. But, hey, you know, you got to have somebody do it. And if he's as good as Bryce Love, why isn't he starting?
Exactly.
Yeah, but USC is starting a kid who is younger than Grant Levine at quarterback. So JT Daniels, who was the consensus top pick out of the 2019 grads, who then reclassified as a 2018 grad. And in order to do this, pretty insane. I thought I sent you the article. I didn't. In order to do this, he took in his second semester of his junior year of high school, he took 11 classes. And on top of that, went to every USC practice. So he was in class, somehow like jamming, stacking classes on top of classes.
In class in high school.
In class in high school, going to USC after school because he was, I don't know how any of that works, but they came up with a plan in January that this is how this is going to work, where JT Daniels will cram in a year and a half of high school basically into a semester while learning the entire USC playbook so that he could potentially start in the fall, which he is.
So he did that last spring.
Correct.
That's insane.
Yeah. And then you have Amon-Ra St. Brown, who was the number one consensus, or one of them, and then it wouldn't be consensus, wide receiver, who also played with him from the time they were in like sixth grade and through high school. They both played at Mater Dei out in Santa Ana, California. So you take those two and basically just chuck them into USC's offense.
Do they have a chance against Stanford?
Stanford's 6-point favorite. I don't think so. It's in Palo Alto, but you never know. Were David Shaw the coach of USC and Clay Helton the coach of Stanford, I would say yes. But given the hand that USC currently has been dealt with Clay Helton as the head coach, I don't know. Today, did you have you been on ESPN.com?
I have.
So did you watch that little
clip? I like to visit that area of the internet.
Yeah, that's my safe space. It's the 39th birthday of ESPN today.
I'm glad you reminded me because I knew that September 7th had a ring to it.
Yes, it should.
A special ring.
Yes.
And I've followed that for many years because I also am 39, just like ESPN.
Are you really?
So I was born in April.
Okay.
And a few months later, ESPN was finally born.
Right? I'm older than you, so that would have been 1979. I don't remember it then. I'm not that much of a hipster, but I remember friends who, for some reason, had ESPN on whatever garbage cable we had at that point. We had this thing called On TV, and you had your regular, the TV with the click, click, click. When you were your dad's remote control.
Right.
And your dad would be like, hey, can you go change a channel? And you click, click, click. Good. All right. Now the reception's lousy. You go stand behind the TV and you're like holding up the antenna. But like there was that. Then there was this box that.
The board with the sliding dial. Did you ever have one of those?
Yeah, we did.
That thing was fun.
Those things were bootleg. but we had the little On TV box that it was off and then it was on. And the reason that we had that was because On TV carried maybe like 10 or 12 more Dodger games a year. The Dodgers hated to televise home games. I don't know what the Red Sox did. Did the Red Sox televise home games back in the day? The Dodgers never would because the O'Malleys were concerned about ticket sales, which never had to worry about.
Yeah, you got to have the fans sell out. It's like the blackouts in NFL. Makes sense.
Right.
You got to fill the stands before you put it on TV.
Right. So the Dodgers never would do it, but the way to do it was on TV. So
did you watch ESPN in 1979?
No, I didn't because I didn't have it. But I remember the next year, like random people had ESPN and like this was this really cool thing, but it was only like Aussie rules football.
Oh, yeah. Those were the good days in the mid 80s.
Yes.
Early morning, you'd have Australian rules football. You had British Open golf.
Yeah. But
roller derby.
They were showing something today where it was like the promo role for ESPN, and a guy named Lee Leonard was the one who was doing the talking about ESPN. I've never heard of him. I don't know that he ever appeared on ESPN after that. He probably shouldn't have. Like, we would have done a better job. He got out there and was talking about ESPN and how historic it was going to be, and then they threw out a little promo roll. And the first thing they showed was USC versus UCLA, showing how important that rivalry is in college football. But then within that promo roll, there was like somebody went to the trouble to record a jingle, which is what you did in the late 70s. And the jingle's bad. The highlights are bad. I think they had like in that promo roll, they had like men's softball. Can you imagine? The BMSL is now televised on ESPN. The Ocho.
What was it? The local Connecticut softball league?
I don't know, but it appeared to be dudes playing softball. Maybe it was the king in his court, Eddie Fainer. I really don't know. But so, yeah, you have to figure, because a lot of people bemoan the existence of ESPN. That was the precursor to sports talk radio, which now we're not real sports talk radio.
What are we?
Oh, well, no, I don't consider us sport. Like, we don't have takes. Well, I mean, we have takes, but we don't have, like, we're not contrarians for the sake of being contrarians. And right. I'm certainly not existing to stir up controversy.
We're not trying to drive ratings with controversy.
Right. No, I'm not going to be asking Tom Brady about, what's his name? His trainer.
Alex Guerrero.
I almost called him Alex Rodriguez, and then Alex Gonzalez, and then I went to Alex Guerrero. But we're not, like, I don't know, and I'm not going to say things just for the sake of ratings, because we don't have those. So, I mean, you kind of get the feeling that a lot of this stuff, a lot of the sports things would have happened anyway.
Yeah.
Without ESPN or not. And it happened that was the thing at the right time.
Well, I've never understood why people bemoan the existence of ESPN. I really don't. And I wouldn't blame it for anything. I say happy birthday, ESPN.
Yeah, no, I love it. It's like, what would I watch in the morning when I work out? What would I have watched in the gym for ages? You know, it's fun.
It provides quite a service. It's quite valuable. So when cable splits into different factions, I would expect it would be one of the most, if not the most expensive options.
Right. No, that's precisely the reason that I have DirecTV Now, is that. So I can get that sort of thing. And, you know, just lest I forget, before we take a quick break, because we've been talking for 38 minutes or so, but this will make it easier for Harry to put this together after the football game tonight.
Okay.
I wanted to give a shout out and congratulations to my number two broadcaster from Kansas City, a kid named Tommy Thrall, who, you know who Denny Matthews is, the voice of the Royals.
Okay.
Yeah. The all right. Well, thanks, Ryan. Yeah.
How long has he been the voice?
The parking spot. Easy to spot, easy to park. The parking spot at MCI. What? He's been the voice since, like, Abner Doubleday didn't invent the game.
Okay.
Literally, I think he was the first year of the Royals. But Denny's been around forever. Well, Tommy reached out to me. It had to be 2005, like, 2004, maybe end of the season, and said, hey, I think at that point in time, he might have been like a sophomore at Northwest Missouri State. I say that with a lack of certainty.
There is a Southwest Missouri State.
He was the stepchild of that one.
Okay.
So, but Tommy was there, asked if he could, you know, hey, I'm a broadcaster. And I said, just come on. This is minor league ball. I'm like, just come on down to the game. Like, you and I can get on the air. Like, if we hate each other, I'll get rid of you. If we like each other, you know, you come, you do some games. I'm not going to take the training wheels off yet because I don't really know you, but hey, whatever. So Tommy comes on, does a few games at the end of that year before he's got to go back to school. He and I, like, became friends, you know, and so the next year Tommy is in school, says, hey, you know, I want to be your commentator and do the middle innings. I said, dude, you save me a lot of time because I don't have to interview anybody. Like, yeah, bring it on. Let's do it. Start this date. And with the indie ball season, you know, it's designed so that college players who might not have gotten a look or guys who got released have a chance to catch on. So it doesn't start till like the middle of May. So, and it ends like right at the end of August. So I knew I was in good shape. So yeah, Tommy, you're on. Did the 2005 season, did the 2006 season for me. You know, the team wouldn't pay him. I gave him a little bit of a stipend because dude's got to have a little walking around money. Come yeah. on. And, you know, team didn't really pay me either. I made $18,000 a year plus commission, but.
And know, hot dogs.
Hot dogs. Every time I got an expense check, I would write the expense check over to Tommy, like for miles or stuff, just because, hey, dude's got to have something. He's working hard and the team won't give him anything, but we were getting innings. We were broadcasting. Well, he stays there for a couple years after I leave. He was the voice of the Quad Cities River Bandits or the Swing of the Quad Cities or whatever, went down to Pensacola, double-A voice of the Reds. And this weekend, a lot of teams will do this. Tommy gets to do some games for the Reds as a Major League Baseball broadcaster.
Awesome.
So, yeah, that was a really long story. But I'm proud of Tommy. It's, he's a goofy kid. And he's not really a kid anymore. Like, and that's, I guess, the part that also just blows my mind.
Yeah. Well, like, congrats to Tommy.
Yeah. So, that was on my mind earlier this week. I was like, we got to have this guy on, but, we'll have him on after the fact. He's a character. He's got some good stories. He actually did games when Billy Hamilton was playing down in Pensacola. So, but with that said, we'll take a quick break. I can't talk anymore. It's 40 minutes. We'll take a quick break and come right back. Harry would also probably want us to do a station ID, so you're listening to Fox on Sports. Welcome back to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Lauren Fox.
Andrew Hansen, segment two.
Segment two of two. So you and I got to go and watch some girls soccer last Friday night. That was fun.
It sure was.
I enjoy watching the Bedford team just because those girls are so fast.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Are they ever?
And the passing, I mean, you have some girls who have a great deal of experience on that team. Not just at the high school level, but, playing on club teams, you name it. Mackenzie McEachran is one who, we had seen last year playing varsity, but she's one who is of slight build. I think she's probably about 5 feet tall, maybe 5'1", but just burns it up the sideline. And she's one that makes it a lot of fun for the other forwards and the midfielders to find, because you pass the space and she gets there and she's tenacious.
She is. She's a game changer with that speed. I mean, that speed sets her apart. It was evident all over the field all night. And you saw it on the first goal, and it was a nice team play. It was really fun to see how it played out, because Brianna Coco started the play from the backfield and had a nice pass up the right wing, and it was like you were describing. McEachran had to go chase it down, and she did easily, and then managed to get the ball over to Shayna Salas, who put it in the net. And so it was just a really great piece of teamwork that – you know, showed the passing and the skill and the speed for that first goal.
Well, and you said that was what I noticed throughout the game. There were a couple opportunities that Bedford had that they could have popped in another goal that for whatever reason they didn't, but they were set up because of crisp passing and field awareness more than anything else, that they won the game over Merrimack 3-1. It could have, Corey Parker said it could have been 5. I thought it could have been even more than that. Olivia Tulin scored the capper for Bedford. Salas had added another one. So the final score in that one, as I mentioned, was 3-1. And then the game that we were not at because we were there. And I mean, my preference is always just to go to the high school.
The home game.
The home game. The boys open a night at home or play their second game at home. I guess it's technically their home opener. They have Merrimack tonight at home. But
Concord.
They have Concord tonight at home?
I think it's Concord.
Hey, thanks for telling me. but nice win for them last Friday night, 31-7 as well.
31-7 against Nashua North. And talk about being all over the field. Ryan Toscano made a handful of excellent plays. You know, started off with his interception in the first quarter in the red zone. You know, from the linebacker position. Nice athletic play.
Right.
And then later in the game when Bedford was ahead 10-0, it was fourth and goal for Nashua North. Their quarterback, you know, was a keeper, and he was diving for the goal line, and Toscano came in from the side and tackled him just in time to force the turnover. And then in the fourth quarter, there was a sack fumble on Bedford's side of the field. Toscano picks it up and returns the fumble over 50 yards for a touchdown. So he also had a sack. He had tackles. So he had an interception, a fumble return for a touchdown, a sack, multiple tackles, and he ran one in on offense as well.
My favorite part of the whole thing was you were sending me over the highlights, and with that, with the highlights that I saw, within that, I was trying to listen to the commentary of our friends, Mike Robinson and the rest of the crew doing it. What I heard in the background was Hanson's kids.
That's right. <'cause laughs> I took a video off the TV replay, and that's what I sent you. So you didn't probably get the full commentary, but Harry was part of the broadcast crew. He was mixing in some stats and some good commentary. But we were also marveling at Maddie Lucantoni's performance.
Yep.
She was perfect on extra points. She had a 31-yard field goal that you described as, it easily could have been good from 40 yards or more.
Yeah, she booted that thing.
And, that you just don't see that in high school football a lot. That's a weakness on many high school football teams.
Right.
The place kicker, and you'll see so many teams score a touchdown and go for two because they don't have any confidence in their kicker.
Yeah.
That's a nice thing to have.
Right. And, you also see the sad end over ends, but... of course, we know this already. She's a soccer player and has done it for a long time, and a determined person, extremely so. So it was fun to watch. It's great to see the hard work pay off. There are really and truly, and I was at Open House at Lurgio last night. There are a lot of neat kids in this community, like kids that just have fascinating backstories and work hard and they're invested in themselves, which you don't always see. You can see parents that are invested in the kids. These kids are really invested in themselves. The one thing that that I was thinking, and I do you ever watch Get Up on ESPN? Speaking of ESPN,
yeah, I do occasionally.
Okay, so Greenberg's got his favorite athlete of all time right now. Have you ever seen that segment? I don't know if they're still doing that.
Yes, I don't. Who is it?
So, no, what he always does, like, it could be, somebody, who was it? I'm trying to remember the major league player who had the Make-A-Wish kid sign his jersey.
Chris Davis.
Chris Davis was his favorite athlete of all time right now because the Make-A-Wish kid signs his jersey and then he goes out and hits a home run. That sort of thing. I think we need to start doing a once a week. This is our Bedford Athlete of the Week. And it doesn't have to be a high school athlete. It could be Nick Stavropoulos for his pitching performance in softball. It could be anything. But thinking about the Athlete of the Week, we can discuss who it might be. Mine for week one, and I don't want Ryan Toscano to think that he's not going to get his because he'll get his eventually. Mine would be Maddie. She's been a good friend of the program. She's come on with us a couple times. Great role model too, particularly for we talked about Serena, as a role model for girls and women, but for some of these girls, it really is instrumental to have somebody that they can look at and say, wow, she's doing that. And it's a weird position for her to be in, but she's there and she's taking advantage of this opportunity. And for that, I have so much respect for it. It takes a lot of guts to do that. So she would be my initial nominee for our Bedford Athlete of the Week. And I guess the other thing that goes with that, I'd welcome nominations from the community.
Yeah, no doubt.
I'd love people to be able to say, hey, it's Dan O'Donnell hit a buzzer beater in the men's league game. He's our Athlete of the Week. Hey, why not?
And send us a video clip if you got
a video clip, that'd be even better. Although, the last video clip I saw of Dan O'Donnell playing basketball was a state championship game for West that he had posted on Facebook.
Oh, I'd like to see that.
It's good. I do think he might have had the same issue you had where there was kid commentary in the background.
That's okay.
Yeah, but...
I can brush that aside.
I would love to hear it because I feel like we're pretty dialed in. People will tend. We have Harry that will email us. Hey, did you see this tweet from Roger Brown about Grant? Kevin Levine is always so kind to let us know. Maddie is always one who's reached out. Paul Toscano, like there are a lot of people who will kind of feed us things. That makes our show easier, but
better,
significantly better because we can't hear everything.
Right.
So what I would like to say is we welcome any nominations. If you have your Bedford Athlete of the Week, the Fox Sun Sports Athlete of the Week, we'll recognize you on the air. you're not going to get anything. you know, maybe we could, you know, if we do an interview in person, we'll buy you a cup of coffee.
Yeah, some pride.
That's about the extent. But yeah, you get the pride. You'll get love on the Facebook page. You know, and with that, you don't have to be a high school player. You could be a rec league player. You could be little league player. It doesn't matter. I want to know what the cool stories are. So, you know, whether it's the youth football leagues, like there are a lot of great stories there. Little league, there are a ton of great, like we had a kid on Maggie's baseball team. Kept asking, can I pitch? Can I pitch? Can I pitch? Kid threw a scoreless inning. He would have been the athlete of the week.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Hands down. Just, yeah. It's like, but there's, you know, you get caught up in going back to the ESPN and is ESPN the devil? Which no, but, you get caught up in the controversy because we all, our brains are wired that way. It's like we're moths to a flame. We are drawn to controversy, but there is a lot that goes on in this community that's cool and fun. So just wanted to welcome everybody to share those stories with us. If you don't have my number, you can find my email, whatever. Or you can find Hanson. He's easy too, but, you know, just let us know if you have a great story or somebody who you think would be a great story, by all means. We want to hear it. That's what makes this show fun. We get to talk about it, but the more we know, the better we are. So, and speaking of Grant, walks.
It's an important part of baseball.
Seriously. He set the record for, was it the Grand Junction record or the Pioneer League record?
I think it was the Grand Junction record, and it was 37, correct?
He has more than that, though. I think he has 42 now.
That's what it was when he set the record.
Yes. Now he's got 45. So Grant, your Grant Levine update, he's hitting 350. He's got 45 walks, 40 strikeouts. So in a day and age where you see a lot of guys who are striking out way more than they're walking, Grant's on the other side of it, and has done all this sort of stuff while we've talked about this a million times. He's 2/3 of the country away. But he's in the Bush Leagues, down in the Pioneer League, and doing well. And if you have a youth baseball player and you're interested in having them work with Grant at all, Grant will be back in the area September, October, doing some lessons. If you are interested in such a thing, by all means, just let me know. And I'm happy to connect you with him. I'm just not going to give you his email address on the air.
Perfect.
That wouldn't be cool.
He's got a lot of great lessons to teach because he's been showing the product of the lessons he's learned so well. I mean,
yes.
to have that walk to strikeout ratio and be hitting 350 with home runs and doubles, that just says a lot. You know, he's got the confidence to go deep into the count, and he's not afraid to go deep into the count. He welcomes it. He's such a patient hitter waiting for a pitch he can drive, and that's how he builds up the walks. So it's just a terrific stat.
And if you are looking at stats like that, Grant is 4th in the Pioneer League in batting average, hitting .350, 3rd in OPS, with an OPS in .996. And his on-base percentage is a Ted Williams-esque .477.
Beautiful.
Yeah. I think that was actually Ted Williams' career on-base percentage. Can you imagine? No, .482.
Even better.
Oh, my God, dude. Can you imagine, like, you play in the major leagues for, I don't know, 19 years, and you get on base roughly half the time that you walk up to bat?
That's
mind-boggling.
That's why he's called the Splendid Splinter.
Mind-boggling. So, yes, I'm not trying to put any pressure on Grant Levine. That's just a really good first year. So, yeah. So, high school golf, we hope to have Coach Dan Colburn on next week. We'll see if his schedule will allow it. But the boys, as we said, open tonight. Hanson and I are arguing about whether it's Concord or Merrimack. Did we ever settle that thing?
Well, according to the high school Twitter page, it's Concord.
Okay, so it is Concord at home tonight. We have not gotten any updates from Bedford High as far as soccer goes. That's not to say that they're not tweeting about it. We just don't know. If you are looking for any information on that, the high school athletic department website is also a helpful resource to let you know. Corey Parker and his crew keep that thing well maintained. So, anything else you want to add on the high school level before we?
No, I'm waiting for the surprise. No, topics that are coming.
That was
we covered it.
That was the topic. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Good.
Boom. So what else? What else you got?
Well, do we want to hit the NFL's opening night?
Yes, we can hit the NFL's opening night.
It wasn't as exciting as you would hope.
No.
But I actually did you notice the anthem? All this talk about the anthem in the NFL.
I didn't watch the game. Where was I? It was open house night.
It was a national anthem that was, it was memorable by itself. It was a Boys to Men version.
ABC, BBD?
Yeah.
It was
really impressive.
Yeah.
I mean,
East Coast Swing.
First one I'd heard in years that I was like, wow, that was really worth listening to.
Not too hard, not too soft.
And it was so fun to have that happen instead of being talking about the anthem for some other reason.
Was it really was it Boys to Men?
Like, yeah, it was three
really?
Of them.
Oh, I mean,
yeah.
It makes sense. It's Philly.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Really?
Yeah.
That's.
It was better than the football.
Yeah, the football was rough.
18-12. Offenses were a little bit stagnant.
Yeah.
I think it was the first time I'd ever seen a running back get four shots at the end zone inside the five and not score, or even see him get four chances, because he had Devontae Freeman had two rushes. Then they tried to throw to him out of the backfield, and then he got the carry on fourth down. He got stuffed.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was a big stand for Philly early that helped. And then Atlanta gave themselves a chance to win with the throw to Julio on the last play of the game, and it was reminiscent of the playoff game where he let the ball go right through his hands. This time he caught it, but he landed out of bounds. So it was at least a dramatic finish. But in between, you know, it was sort of like preseason football.
It's funny though, Julio Jones. What was the stat? They've completed one of 20 passes where he is targeted in the end zone.
Yeah, they just can't connect with him in the red zone for some reason.
Just bizarre. You look at that and you say, well, why are they continuing to do the same thing? I mean, that's the definition of insanity. Like, it's not working.
Well,
let's keep doing it.
They at least targeted him a lot more than they were last year. That seems like Sarkisian's plan this year is let's take advantage of the fact that we have Julio Jones.
Oh, I forgot about him.
Yeah.
That's why.
Yeah, his second year.
Hey,
he had 19 targets yesterday, 10 receptions for 169 yards.
It's nice.
So he was the best player on the field.
Right.
Just didn't catch, you know, he just didn't stay in the end zone on that last play.
Right. But, I mean, even with that, you only scored 12 points. Like,
not going to cut it.
Yeah, you're not going to cut it at all. And the other thing is there was legal gambling on the game, which Nielsen's estimate on that was eventually $2.3 billion in revenue related to that. I think that is a very conservative estimate.
Yeah, probably. Whatever the first estimate is, it's probably about a 50% worth of the actual figure.
There's going to be way more of that. So, but, you know, my challenge with the NFL, and the NFL has this challenge too, and I think they really do need a change in leadership, because a lot has been butchered by the NFL over the last few years, which starts with Roger Goodell at the top. And, you know, I think for a multi-billion dollar enterprise, it does need to be run better than it is. And even little things like last night, which little things that are going to be a big thing, quarterback sack on Foles. Looks clean. Don't know how else you'd make that tackle. And it's a 15-yard roughing the passer penalty. I don't have a way other than like an anti-gravity suit where you can make that sack of a quarterback. Well, to like the sack of a quarterback in a situation like that is about as pivotal of a play in a game. It's like the equivalent of the Brandon Phillips home run that gives you the lead. Like now all of a sudden, bam, we buried the team. Going to get the ball back. Field position is going to change. Everything flips. Oh, wait, there's a flag in the backfield for making a tackle?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, I did see the little bit of a transition in that play where it seemed it went from grasping him to really planting him.
But Foles also had his arm around the defender's head and was pulling down on that as well. So, like, there's that piece, too.
I didn't see that part.
The thing that I just can't figure out is, we talk about these things, and we discussed it when we were talking about Daniel Murphy and Matt Carpenter hitting and hitting into shifts. And why don't the guys just beat the shift? Why don't they? Because somebody's throwing 99 miles an hour with movement to them. That's why they just don't beat the shift, because it's not that easy. Because even if you're an elite athlete, your brain can only slow so much down so much.
Right. You got to run, you know, 30 miles an hour to try and catch Russell Wilson.
Right.
And then once you dive for him and grab him, then you, make sure you stop your momentum.
Like, how do you, like, it's not like I tap the brakes in a car, or it's not like I press the button on a phone or like a stopwatch. Like, this is, in these cases, 250, 260 pounds that you're asking to just stop on a dime. Like, you have to realize, it's, and I am going back to the interview with Coach Stank, I agree with him completely. The game does need to change in order to grow and in order to continue to exist. And it needs to become safer so that people are more comfortable allowing their kids to play it. Absolutely 100%. But putting silly, thoughtless penalties in place that, because this was the penalty for week one, now we're going to have to deal with this through week, whenever the first week of February, the Super Bowl. And the same way that we dealt with the catch or no catch. Like,
it is easier to make a catch, though, this year.
Thank goodness.
And there was a play like that last night.
But do you remember being a kid and playing football in the lot across the street from your house, and you would make a catch, and, all right, is it I have 1 foot or 2 feet in bounds, and I'm holding the ball cleanly afterward, therefore it's a catch. Nobody's like, yeah, I got you on my iPhone in slow motion, and you juggled the ball.
Right.
Like, no, like, sometimes the simplest solution is the best.
Yeah, thankfully, it is easier to make a catch, though. There was a play reviewed last night, and the player was, the ball hit the ground as part of his catch. It looked like it looked like it wobbled a little bit, but they gave him the catch.
You shouldn't need a law degree to effectively enumerate what a catch is. It should be simpler. Like, there are some things that I agree with. A defenseless guy going across the middle, absolutely. Don't put your helmet into his chin. A quarterback who is sliding, absolutely. Don't put your helmet into his chin. Those are simple, logical rules to follow. Putting in illogical rules for really no reason. Like, and I know why the quarterback sack rule is in there. It's because Aaron Rodgers broke his collarbone last year. It's like the Buster Posey rule in Major League Baseball, where Buster Posey, okay, so now because of this, did the throw drag the catcher into the path of the runner, or was the catcher set up there? Oh, my God. Like, can we just make a call?
Yeah, it's tough to evaluate.
Yeah.
But that's the crazy thing about football, and I agree with Coach Stank as well, making the game safer. But the thing is, it's such a physical game. Injuries happen so often.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I got to give a shout-out to Timothy Gallimaga in that first game last week against Nashua North. I haven't heard since, but he appeared to hurt his knee on a freak play where he's just trying to block. And the guy who was coming in to sack Thomas Morgan, he flipped around and his leg swung into Gallimaga. And it was just a freak timing thing that made his knee buckle.
Yep.
So I got to hope that he's going to be okay, because, you know, Coach Stank was talking about him as one of the stalwarts of that offensive line.
Yeah, and that's, you never want to lose that. And you never want any of your kids to get injured. Like, Stank at this point, he's coached these kids for a long time. He knows them. They become a family. You never want to see that. And particularly when it's a kid's senior year of high school, absolutely. The kid wants to be out there. You want him out there. Like, it's a team. It becomes a family. So with that said, we're going to thank our Bedford 105.1 family here, Harry, Bill, Colleen, and Chris, for everything that they do. Harry is putting the show together late night. So thank you for that. I appreciate you accommodating our schedule. Thank you to my broadcast partner, Andrew Hansen, and have a great sports week. We'll catch you next time. You'll be listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1.